You're listening to Finding Your Genius Zone with Dirk Novell. With the help of successful individuals across industries, Dirk breaks down the unknown parts of every vocation while highlighting the importance of finding a career where you can leverage your natural skills, passions, and interests. Now here's your host, Dirk Novell.
Hello, everyone. This is Dirk Novell. Welcome to my podcast. On with me is a friend, Sam Willing. Welcome, Sam.
Thank you. Hello. It's so good to be here.
Thank you. You know, I've wanted to have you on for a while. You know, the truth is I don't know Sam all that well. I met Sam and her husband, Reg, through mutual friends years ago. And I've kind of seen, you know, with social media, I've kind of seen some of your content and what you're doing. And I've always really kind of been attracted to it. And when I started this podcast, I thought you'd be really good in terms of coming on, talking about your careers, as well as just advice on careers. So why don't I flip it to you? And maybe the audience is coming in hot. I don't know if it's, we're going to market you as human resources and leadership coaching, but let's kind of address what it is you do now, and then we'll just kind of let it go backwards and see what happens.
Yeah, perfect. So, okay. So what I do now, so right now, my full-time role is I'm chief people officer for a biotech company in Seattle. I have been doing human resources for 25 years in my career. And really the last, about the last 12 years, it's been focused on HR leadership. And then the last about 6 to 7 years, it's been specifically focused on building culture. So I love that work. I love parts of that work. I shall say we can talk about that in a minute. And then the other thing that I do is I've had my own executive coaching business for about 13 years. And I would say the coaching part of my life is my total passion. I love doing transformational leadership coaching, both with executives who are who have so much potential and have experienced some success, but have some things that aren't quite, they can't quite break through. Either it's some leadership behaviors, some mindset things, and they're really trying to lean into their growth and development. I also tend to coach a lot of folks who are at that high level, and they're asking themselves, like, is there more? What do I want to do? I've always done this. I want to make a change, but I'm scared. So those are the two folks that I tend to do my transformational leadership coaching with. And then I go into a lot of businesses and I'll do culture work. So leadership and team workshops on team effectiveness, driving positive culture, really helping more from that cultural strategic perspective.
Love it. It's interesting. I always think I know exactly what it is my guests do, and you kind of threw one at me. So I was thinking you also were coaching just one-on-one life coach, personal coach. So would you say most of your time is spent like in the corporate world?
You know, I would say, so I don't consider myself a life coach. What I would say though, is that what I believe, and I think what we know about work is that we can't separate our life from our work. And the most effective leaders that I know actually have a beautiful kind of harmony between their life and their work. And work is this like slice of your life, right? It's not the whole slice. And so while I don't consider myself a life coach, I do consider, we do get into life things. I would say I spend most of my time working with corporate clients. They're not all attached to a company. So clients either come to me one-on-one, they're paying out of their own pocket. They have they're kind of trying to find their path and they want to invest in coaching. Or sometimes corporations will hire me, right, to work with their leaders to really help equip them and get them to the next level. Those are the areas and the levels I tend to work with. I think one of the things I'm really passionate about, though, that I always try to make sure I have space for is I do a lot of pro bono work, specifically with like executive directors of nonprofits, or people who I just love to mentor and coach anyways. So I try to always leave some space for that too, because there's a lot of folks in that sort of mid-level or even newer to career that are asking a lot of the same questions.
So it's interesting. So you started off in HR, and you can correct me if I'm saying it wrong, but it really makes it's very logical. Like, you have all this experience of working in corporations, dealing with all the HR issues that come up. Did you just over the years kind of develop like a niche or I should say an interest in like the executive performance? Like, how did it come about, or was it something you've always wanted to do?
Yeah, such a good question. You know, I think it's funny when I think back, because I can look as now I'm almost 50, right? Yeah. So I look back at my life and I am like, yeah, of course I ended up in HR, right? When I always knew I was either going to be a therapist or I was going to be a teacher. Those are the things that I naturally loved. When I was in college, I was like, oh, how am I going to make it financially in those professions? I'm going to get a business degree. And of course, in the business world, HR was sort of a natural for me because I am an empath. I love relationships. I love people. I have been the person. In fact, my nickname in college was counselor. It was like, I just have sort of naturally played that role a lot in my life. So I started in HR, and I have stayed in HR. And I think for me, I've always been on any HR team I've ever been on, from like very junior in career. I've become like the people person or the hard conversation person. And so I learned just through, quite honestly, mentors and bosses who sort of threw me into the fire on employee relations issues, probably way before I was ready, right? Like, I fired my first person in college, right? I was doing drug testing to hire people in college when I was doing internships. And so there were a lot of things that I sort of just, it matched really well with my natural EQ, I would say. I think one of the things when I was at that mid-level of HR manager level, I was working for a corporation, and I remember it being a really pivotal moment for me because I had just started in the job. I was tasked with firing an employee. I had been told, you know, she wasn't performing. They'd gone through all the steps. And my boss at the time was like, no HR person wants that to be like one of the very first things that we're tasked with, right? But it was like, this is how we do it here. This is what you're doing. You're going to tell her she's let go. You're going to walk her out of the building and to her car. And so I went ahead and did that. Well, I sat down with her to let her know that she was no longer going to be an employee, and she was devastated. She cried. She, you know, felt like she had tried so hard and still it just wasn't cutting it. And in this moment, it was like my compassion muscle kicked in. And I was like, you know, you can leave for the day. And if you'd like to come back after hours or this weekend to get your things, I can help you do that, right? I wasn't going to follow the normal process of like standing over her desk while she cleaned out her things, walking her out the door, which a lot of companies do for security reasons. And I always think that there's a workaround to that, right? So I sort of made this decision. And I remember right after telling my boss, who was a C-level HR executive, and him saying to me, that's not how we do it here. And no one's going to come back on the weekend to help her do that. And I said, oh, well, I will, right? So that weekend I met her back at the office. We cleaned out her things together. I walked her to her car and was holding a box. And she looked at me and her eyes filled with tears. And she said, thank you so much for making the effort and not embarrassing me. Mm. And she gave me a hug. And I, in that moment, I got in my car, I drove home, and it was like, yes, I took time away from my young children at the time. I drove 30 minutes away helped her do this on a weekend, but everything in me was like, that's right. Like, that is right. Like, from a human being perspective, that's right. And so I think for me, to answer your question about how I landed at that executive level, is that I started to connect the dots at that point on the need for compassionate leadership. And as I've progressed in my career, I so clearly understand that what drives positive company culture are the executives at the top, how they're showing up, how they're modeling, how they're communicating, You can put a ton of effort into building a positive, fun culture, but if your executives are not coming from an authentic place and doing the work themselves to show up in that way, it will never stick. And so I think for me, when I just became kind of this like executive, like cleanup girl, right? In my HR roles, where I go in and it's like every time I'm in a leadership position and we're like, you know, oh, we're letting someone go. I look back at our executive team and I'm like, okay, they weren't performing. What's our responsibility in that?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I think for me, I have such a mission and a call to like equip and make better the people at the top, right? And then equip and prepare the people coming up to the top so that they are better leaders than we've had before.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I've never thought about businesses like that, but like years ago, I worked with this guy and he was the most impressive sales guy. His name was Tim Sanders, and he became a really good speaker, like a national and an author. And he wrote a book, something like Love is the Killer App in the Corporate World, or it was something like that. But I remember it was the first time I thought love or compassion in the corporate world. But as far as like creating a sticky environment of loyal people that go the extra mile, it seems like such a crucial component that you recognized at an early age. And by the way, were you a natural helper in high school?
I was.
I thought so.
And I'm an Enneagram 2. So that is also a helper. So it's like, you know, of course I'm in this role.
I love the Enneagram. Is that your only personality type, or what's your second one?
So I am a 2 with a really fierce 3 wing.
Okay. And tell me what 3 is again.
3 is like a performer, like achiever.
Okay.
So that's, yeah.
I'm a consistent solid 4.
Oh, interesting. Which is very creative.
Well, it's like, yeah, it's very kind of individual, like trying to like do, I've never been good at, following the crowd. Right.
Yeah.
But I also have a strong 8, which I think is challenger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So it's an interesting combination. I love the Enneagram, by the way.
I do too. I love it.
So, you know, you're talking and then I'm thinking, you know, people are going to be, I guess the question I would have is like, let's just kind of step back a little bit and take HR. Can you kind of talk about briefly, like some of the different flavors of HR? Cause some of the skill sets are very different, like doing benefits, doing admin, and then being the people person like you are. Like, is there 10 of them, 20 of them, or is there 8, or how many different?
You know, there's a lot, and a lot of it depends on the size of company, right? Okay. And so I think, you know, I've sort of done everything under the sun. I started my career as a like junior HR generalist, where a generalist, you're sort of doing everything, right? You kind of dabble in everything. And then I moved into a recruiter role, which is, you know, I was only doing hiring. And that's, you know, that was fun. I was doing it for Microsoft at the time. And so there's a lot of action going on. I learned a ton from that experience. And then, you know, so there's sort of the generalist profile, which you're really doing kind of everything. There's recruiting, hiring. There is the benefits role, which I've never done. I've done that from a generalist perspective, but I've never been a benefits person. I'm not necessarily a detail person. So I always knew benefits. I like that was not going to be my thing, my area. And then you start to get into the HR manager type roles and leadership roles. And I think, like I said, it can really vary depending on the size of the company. So if you're at a large company, they're going to have like very narrow HR roles. They're going to have, you know, benefits. They're going to have employee relations. They're going to have employee development. I have mostly been at small to mid-sized companies. So my role in general, as I went through like the HR manager path, was really to be that generalist. Although at that time, I wasn't owning recruiting. I had someone that owned recruiting and someone that owned benefits under me. But there's the bigger the organization gets, the more you have sort of these niches within HR. So there's also this whole umbrella around employee development. And then now a lot of companies have a portion of folks that just focus on culture, right? And so for me, I had the benefit of being employed by Line Aid. I don't know if you know that company by name, but they were a company, and they were bought by WebMD not very long ago. But that experience for me, so they actually were a software company that focused on employee engagement and employee experience. And so when I started working there, and I eventually was the head of HR there, my boss was a woman named Dr. Laura Hamill. She was the chief people officer and chief scientific officer there. She has built her entire career around studying work, like why we work, why we need meaning in our work, why we need purpose, how well-being fits into work. And so that for me opened up a huge piece of HR that I always instinctively wanted to be there and wanted to pursue, but I'd never been anywhere where it was like, no, this actually really matters. Like how we treat each other really matters. Well-being and work really matters. Having meaningful work really matters. And we have the scientific data to back it up. And so that role for me was pretty pivotal in terms of letting me shift from just doing what can feel sometimes like narrow HR work to having a more, doing more of that culture and employee experience work. I still was doing like employee relations and sort of the nuts and bolts of foundational HR, but it opened up this huge section of work that sort of like ignited a fire in me that I was like, oh yeah, this is actually, I think, the work I'm supposed to be pursuing.
So I'm thinking about, let's just say a young man, a young woman who for some reason, maybe their parents were in HR, they're very interested, but it feels like there's just so many different flavors and skills. Like one person might be really good in one area and not, I guess, is there advice if somebody is kind of pretty adamant about getting into this world of HR, how they might kind of figure out which areas, or is it just they do it all and then eventually just kind of gravitate towards a specific section or area?
Yeah. Well, I think that one of the very first things to really search, you know, your heart and soul on is, are you a helper? Like, are you someone who enjoys being in service of other people? Are you someone who feels passionate about improving life for other people? Because I think, and it doesn't make someone not an amazing person if that's not what's at their core. But the thing about HR is it is a service role. You know, when you're in HR, you are in service to the organization. And the way that I look at my role as an HR leader is like, I believe it's my job and my team's job to actively look for ways to take the anxiety out of work for people. Right. And so I think the first key to even deciding if you really want to be in HR is, do I like being in service to others? Being in a service role, it's very different than being in like a sales role where you get a lot of, you know, accolades or glory and you have a lot of metrics and you crush it and you get rewarded for that. HR can be really challenging because you are in service of others, but it's very rare for people to check on the HR team or the HR person, right? It's sort of, you're always pouring out. And so you have to be realistic with yourself on, you know, do I really get fulfillment off of being in service to other people? That's the first question. And if you do, then thinking deeper about what are the ways that I enjoy interacting with people, right? If you are someone who you love people and you love being in service, but you don't necessarily love to interact with people a lot. You might be great in a benefits role, right? You probably aren't going to be happy or excited about being in a recruiting role where you are constantly talking and interacting with people and have to maintain fairly high energy, or even an employee relations role, so a generalist role. You're handling a lot of employee relations, right? You're handling the sticky things. The employee relations is like when something's not going quite right, right? Either from an employee perspective or a manager perspective, if there's a termination to be done, those are really challenging things to take on. And for many people, it's like, that is actually not, that is soul sucking for them to have to engage in that kind of work, right? So I think if you answer the question like, yes, I'm a helper. I love being in service to other people. This is the work I want to do. I love, you know, what level of interaction do I enjoy? Okay, where's the space for me, right? If you love interacting with people, you love having relationships, then you might be a great HR generalist, right? Not that there aren't benefits people that aren't people, right? But I think I've been surprised over the 25 years in my career around how many people actually end up in HR that are not into people. It's actually pretty startling. And, you know, my very first boss ever straight out of college in HR, he was sort of this like what East Coast, like tough love guy. And I will never forget, like right when I started, he said to me, he's like, listen, there are a lot of poor HR people out there because HR can be a really easy profession to hang out in. And he's like, don't be one of them. And I'm like, got it. Okay. You know,
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do want to ask you about compensation and just kind of freedom. Like, what's your life like? And I don't mean specifically, Sam, what do you make? But if somebody is interested in HR, is it always a salary job or an hourly, or is there a bonus, commission, a stock option? I mean, how do you scale? Or is it a job where you just have to be content kind of being, you know, there's a limit and that's it?
Yeah. Such a good question. So compensation is the other big portion of HR, right? That I didn't mention, but that is a job in itself. In terms of compensation though, most HR jobs are going to be salaried. If you are just starting out, there are some companies, particularly larger companies, that might have like a coordinator role that's more very administrative that may be hourly. But I think generally, I have not seen hourly HR roles for a really long time in the market at this point. So most of them are going to be salaried. Depending on the company, you will get an annual bonus. So I think, you know, if you are out there hunting for a job in HR, look for like salary, bonus, all of the benefits, all of the things that you would want in any other job. The benefit is typically tied. It depends on how the company does it. Everybody does it differently, right? But it tends to be like a flat percentage based on the level of the role that you're in, right? So bonus is typical. Commission, no, like there's not really anything that you're selling. Again, it's a service role, right? So there's not this like potential extra that you can make. Now, the one caveat to that is in recruiting. If you are someone who like, you're like, I love people. I think I'd like to be in something in HR. I also think I love sales. If you go into a recruiting role, like for a recruiting company, you are probably going to have incentives, right? Because you're probably commissioned, you're probably making bonuses. And so that is a very, I think, personality driven thing. It's like, I knew that wasn't going to be a match for me because I like depth in my relationship. So I prefer the HR work versus like the quick turn of recruiting. I also am not competitive or really driven financially, right? Okay. So those weren't necessarily going to be things for me. Oh, but you know, you can have a great HR, like you can make great money in HR, right? And there is third-party market data that most companies use to determine the salary based on the level that you're coming in at. This is a whole nother subject, but if there are a lot of young people, or I guess any age people listening to this podcast, I would say that are thinking about job hunting or job hunting right now, I would say, like, please negotiate. Like, please negotiate your salary. I have, especially women, for any women listening, it took me a long time in my own career to do that. And I just want to encourage, I have a 22-year-old daughter who has been, you know, job searching. She's just about to graduate from college. And it's like, it is okay and good for you to do that. Right.
So also probably
a little side plug.
I almost feel like it's attractive to the person interviewing you. Like, it's like, I like that in somebody. Okay. So all these things are popping in my brain that I want to talk about, but I do want to ask just about, like, what is it like to be in your world with your life, your freedom? Yeah. Like, and then I guess the second part of that is, like, for example, like, are you getting called on the weekends, nighttime? And then you talk about, the other thing is you talk about being in service so much. And then you're also a mom and a wife. And that's also, I know how much my wife is in service. Like, she does so much for our family. So I guess the question is, it almost feels like, can it be an overload of being in service? Like, how the hell do you get out of service when you want to be service, or you want to, like, do you feel like you get that in your life, or do you have to, like, really take bold steps to not be in service, I guess is the way I would say it.
Oh my gosh, those are both really good questions. Okay, so freedom, on the freedom question, I would say younger in my career, I had less freedom, but the world was also very different, right? Like, there was not remote work. There was no such thing, you know? And so I believe that most roles now, particularly after the pandemic, do have a level of freedom that we haven't seen before. And that includes HR roles. So I think one of the things that two things, one, the pandemic also brought a complexity to the role of HR that we've also never seen before. So it has gotten, there were a lot of people that just dropped out of the function because it just got really complicated to do HR. You just couldn't keep up, right, with, like, being in service, kind of like what you're saying around your second question is, like, there was this compassion fatigue that literally just would, like, overtake you because you couldn't possibly address everything that was happening. You, in general, you know, HR is, depending on the company and the amount of intensity, if you're at a startup, you know, when I've been at high growth startups, it is sort of an all hands on deck situation. I've had jobs before where I have worked, you know, 50, 60 hours a week and you're grinding and we're, like, on this mission. In general, HR is not necessarily something, unless you're doing recruiting, right? And you're working to close a candidate or close, then you might have some times where you're hopping on the phone or hopping on email on a weekend. I think for me, the freedom that I have to, you know, work remotely and sort of work from anywhere is high because our employees are also spread out everywhere, right? So much of the work that we do now is accommodating this new remote world we're in. So I think there's a level of freedom that I certainly haven't experienced before. And I think is available at many, many companies. I think it's, you know, it can be challenging to have, like, the difficult conversations if you're in an HR role where a big part of your role is disciplinary or having difficult, challenging conversations with employees or executives, or you have to fire someone. I mean, there are things that I feel torn about. It's like, in a way, doing a termination now, which was before the pandemic, it was like, I would never have done a termination over Zoom. Like, that was just, it would never even have crossed my mind. Always in person, right? Now, during the pandemic, they were done over Zoom. Now we're out of the pandemic and I have done them in person and over Zoom. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting is that there is a preference on the employee's part to be on Zoom. I think it's less embarrassing. You're not in an office setting. You're not like exchanging physical energy with the person sitting across from you. And so that's been a big shift for me. But I think, you know, at my level, at an executive level, definitely there are times where we've got something going on and I've got to take a call on a weekend, right?
Yep. Sometimes you just got to show up. But I mean, it's not necessarily stereotypical you're tied to a desk. Like you can have a life and a family.
Yeah. You can have a life and a family. I think though, you know, for me, I have learned over time that it's like, if I'm going to work and being a mom and a wife is so important to me. And then there's like me, right? Like I'm also so important to me, which isn't something that I came to until later in my life, right? Yeah. So the tendency when my kids were young was like, I would spend 8 to 5 pretending that I was like 100% in and like didn't have kids, right? And then I would like hop in the car at 5 and like white knuckle it all the way home, go into full mom mode, right? And then there's just no space for me to recover or take care of myself. So for a lot of years, I was in that cycle. And I would say there was definitely like seasons of exhaustion and burnout. And so I think for me now, what I understand is that when we say, like when people are like, I'm 100% in to my job, it's like, okay, but we only have 100%, like in totality, right? So you can't be 100% in on anything. Work is just this slice, right? And it's up to you to create boundaries in a service role. And as someone, as an Enneagram 2 and someone who feels good when she's needed and being in service, that's how I get a lot of my value. Setting boundaries was tricky for me, right? And so I think I've had to work really hard. I think in later years, I've been much better about it. So now, like as a mom, I started doing, you know, when I accepted my job at Limeade, now it's been several years, but my kids were younger. And I said, like, as part of my acceptance, it was like, okay, but I'm, as long as I have kids at home walking through the door in the afternoon, I'm going to be there. So I'm going to leave. I'll say yes to this, but I'm going to leave every day at 3 o'clock. Right. And like there maybe were times where I'd make exceptions, but it was rare. It was like, no, this was the deal. I'm leaving every day at 3 o'clock and then I'll hop on and get my work done. But I wasn't okay with not being the mom that was like there to make the snack, there to check in, you know? So I think it, you just have to get really good at setting boundaries. And you also have to decide that, you know, you mentioned before, you're like service, service, service. And it took me a long time to understand that it was like, you can't pour from an empty cup, right? Like you can't actually serve other people and love them well if you are not filled up first. And so I would say probably in these last few years, I've had to really reevaluate how I was prioritizing myself and understanding how important my foundation was. Yeah. And then that just made me a better mom, a better wife, and frankly, better at my job because I wasn't so like gripping it so tightly. And you know what? It went great. Like nothing happened. The work got done. It made me better. Right. So
I love it.
Yeah.
And by the way, I just want to make sure it's 1:41. You've got a 2 o'clock. I want to make sure we carve out some time, and I don't mean to do 180, but I really wanted you to kind of talk a little bit about the question is like, what career advice can you give to somebody? You said your daughter's 22. I mean, you know, the social media, a lot of voices in these young adults' heads of like, you know, especially growing up in Bellevue where I did, it's like, it's competitive and you think you need to be a lawyer or a doctor or go to New York and be on the stuff, you know, be a financial service. It's like, it's competitive, especially in our little world. you've been in HR, you've seen people who are successful. And my assumption is, correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of these people were that you might have said, huh, this person is just exceptional, or they're really good, or they stand out. They might have just really enjoyed what they do. And maybe what they were doing was in alignment with their true self. Mm-hmm. My question is, what advice would you give to somebody who's maybe not interested in HR? They're just trying to be happy in their job or their career, but they don't know what they want to do.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. And I'm having so many of these conversations right now with my daughter and her friends, right? Because they're seniors in college. And it's interesting. I've watched this energy, right? She lives in a house with 8 girls. I mean, so you can imagine the energy already, right? And they're all drivers. They're all smart. You know, they're graduating with all different degrees. And this year, a few months into their senior year, there became this like energetic, like frenzy in like pursuit of like a plan, a job, having to get things lined up, having to, right? And I watched my daughter who, you know, she's studying psychology, she's sports psychology, she has a plan, she's going to do a psychology service year, and then she's going to grad school, right? And like, suddenly she's calling me and she's like, I just feel so much pressure. And I feel like I should be looking at a job. And I started looking at HR jobs. And what do you think? And it's like, okay, hold on. Like, where is this coming from? And I think really what a lot of the conversations I'm having, and I would say this to anyone, particularly young people, because, you know, you're sort of programmed that you go to college, you get your degree, you're supposed to do something with your degree, and your senior year of college, as you get closer to getting out, people start asking you, what are you going to do? What's the plan? What are you going to do next? Right. And as you said, you know, I'm from Bellevue as well. And there's like this pressure cooker of expectation. And it's so interesting because what I see is a lot of these young people just say yes to jobs because it's a job. Right. It's like the first, they interview for something, it comes their way, they get an offer and they're like, oh, I don't really want to sit at a desk all day, but like, oh, it's a job. I'm going to say yes. Right. And I've seen enough people in my career that have started their careers that way and have continued through their whole career, just like taking a job after a job after a job and making good money. Right. And then you get to the point financially, where you've maybe been in this profession, you just keep humming along, your heart's not really in it, but you might be good at it. And suddenly you've worked at it for however many years, let's say 10 years. And suddenly you're like, oh, there has to be more. Like, I want to do what I am put on this earth to do. And this isn't it. And now you're like, but I'm trapped. Because I'm in this profession and it pays me this much money and there's not another, if I make a switch now, I'm going to have to take a step back and I'm not going to make this much money. And so they never make the leap, right? They just keep going along. And I think, you know, so one of my greatest joys was that my daughter was offered a job. So she's finding a full-time job for her psychology service here. She was offered a job through this really great psychology service program. And she called me, she's telling me about it and she didn't sound excited. I'm like, are you excited about it? She's like, I mean, I'm grateful. Like it's a job and I'd make good money. And so I started asking her these questions and I was like, well, the thing is like, you have to figure out like, are you reluctant because it's just something new and out of your comfort zone, and so you're kind of uncomfortable? Or are you reluctant because it doesn't quite feel right? Because if you're reluctant because it doesn't quite feel right, you need to explore that. Because don't say yes to something just because you're afraid that there's not something else coming. Right?
Yep. And I don't mean to interrupt you, good, but I really, this is so good because... Sorry, Sam, I don't, no, but
do
like,
it.
This is the thing that I really battle with on this podcast is it's like dating. You need to go date to kind of tell what you like. And you kind of know, but maybe you got to go out on dates and figure it out. Like, I get responses where you just got to get out there and work and you'll figure it out. But I also think there's a, and this is a question, is there's a time period, a moment at your daughter's age, or maybe during college or high school, where there's questions or there's this process that needs to be identified of like, what is the obvious stuff that just smacks you in your face? Like, you know, you don't like sales, but like, you know, you go paint or you go for a hike or you want to go help people. Like, what do people come to you for that they don't go to anybody else for? My question is, how do you give that advice to people like your daughter or her age? Like, because I don't think these kids or young adults are even thinking about, they're just thinking about what their parents want them to do or society. Like, how do you get them to think about what their true values and passions and interests are?
Oh my gosh, it's such a good question. So first of all, there is a book that I really love. It's called The Crossroads of Should and Must.
Oh, wow.
It's really good. It's okay. Really great for any age, but it's particularly great, I think, for young people. And it really makes you, it's very introspective. It really makes you think about, like, there are these things that we tell ourselves we should do, which are like maybe what our degree's in, or maybe what our parents want us to do or whatever. And then there's these things in us deeply that we must do, right? It's like, I must be in nature. I must create. I must be doing art or interacting with other people. And so I think it's great to start to go take a little bit of time to go through some exercises where you're teasing out, like, what are the things that I'm telling myself I should do? Mm-hmm. And like putting them here. And what are the things like that if I'm just answering quickly that my heart is really desiring, right? So first getting clear on that and then thinking about things like, what do people consistently ask me for help with, right? And the thing is that when you do that work and you become clear on your values, like what do you value? What do you want the most? What do you value? Like maybe you value freedom above all, right? Like you're like, I just want freedom. Mm-hmm. It's like those values and really putting aside the things that you're telling yourself you should do, that can really help drive what you say yes to, right? Saying yes from a lens of that. Now, there is also the reality that like you need a job and you have bills to pay. And there's a reality of that. And so you may do all of that introspective work and you may say like, this is what like my heart's desire is to be an artist or my heart's desire is to be a life coach or whatever it is. Okay. Realistically, can I do that right now? Maybe I can't. Maybe it's not realistic for me to say, you know, I actually am just going to like pursue art because I actually financially need to get a job to pay the bills. But if you know where your heart's desire is and you can create space in your life to pursue those things, and then you say yes to a job that hits maybe some of your boxes. It's like, this is a good job. I'll be able to add value at this company. I know this probably isn't my forever and that's okay, right? And you continue to pursue your passions and you allow life to unfold, but it's from a different lens of saying like, I need a job. I need it to have, like, I need it. I graduated with a finance degree. I need a finance job. My parents are pushing me to get a finance job. I get a finance job offer and I'm like, yes, because I guess this is as good as it's going to get. But I haven't even taken the time to, one, look broadly because I'm so anxious about having it checked off quickly, right? I haven't even taken the time to look broadly and I haven't taken the time and given myself the gift of understanding like really what makes me unique and what I feel like I'm called to do, you know, and I think I'm a good example of that, Dirk, because I have been in HR for a very long time. I opened my own coaching business 13 years ago. Coaching is my passion. I've always, in every job I've taken since then, I've said up front, great, and I have a coaching business. And so I reserve like Wednesday mornings for my coaching time, right? I don't take a ton of clients. I have like a finite amount I create space for. But I know that me being able to pursue and do that work actually makes me better in my job, right? Because it's feeding something. Now, my ultimate dream is that I like lock up or put away my corporate roles and I take all the experience I've gained and I fully pursue coaching and consulting. And I'm going to be able to do that because I've nurtured that passion, right? And I've stayed in the reality of like, I'm going to work. I'm choosing to work in this corporate job for a while. We've got two kids in school. We've got financial goals, right?
Yeah.
But just being able to create space to pursue that passion and knowing what the passion is has been really helpful.
I love it. I mean, I even the podcast, I told you I'm getting close to 100. It's actually made me better in my real estate lending yes. job just because I have more energy, right? And yes. And I love it. And before I know we're getting close, let's see what time. We got 5 minutes. There's a book that I read that really stuck with me. And the title was Authentic Success. And I think the author was Robert Holden.
Okay.
And Robert, actually, I went to a seminar at University of Santa Monica where he did a 3-day seminar on the Enneagram, which was so amazing. He went over all the types. But authentic success is something that, like, for a long time, my first 15 years, I felt like my definition was my dad's and I didn't know it, right? And so for me, the last decade has been kind of defining my own authentic success. So I love what you said, because I'd like to give better advice to younger adults or people, even in their 30s or 40s that are making a career change, to kind of like take a step back and pay attention to the obvious. Because I think sometimes the obvious is kind of the direction you need to go in. And we get kind of, I don't know, confused a little bit at all the voices in our head. As we end this, is there anything I haven't asked you that you think you understand the gist of this podcast? Is there anything I haven't asked or that you might want to leave the audience with as far as just, I mean, you just talked about advice, but anything else that maybe you want to say?
You know, I think what I would just say is, you know, I've been like really studying compassion for a few years now and the role in not only work, but just in our life in general. And I think compassion is the key to meaningful change. And a big piece of that is self-compassion. And so I would just say to all of the listeners who might be searching and like feeling little like pricks of like calling, like, I wonder if there's more, I'm unsatisfied with what I'm doing. I'm not feeling fulfilled. I just want one to stress how important self-compassion is in that process. Like, I don't believe that any experience is wasted, right? So even if you are someone who you made a choice to go into accounting or whatever it is, and you are now sort of saying like, oh, I wish I would have done something different. I wish I would have chosen a different path. I just want you to have so much compassion for yourself and knowing like, hey, all of this experience that you have is going to be used for something because nothing's wasted, but give yourself the gift of exploring what you're really longing for, the gifts that maybe you have buried or that are untapped, that potential that you have. And a great way to do that is to get in the right spaces with people who can coach you, ask you those questions, help you do that reflective work. And then I also want to say, when you do it, don't be afraid of the answer. Like, don't be afraid if like at the end of all that work, you're like, oh my gosh. Like for me, it's like, oh my gosh, I've done HR for 25 years. It turns out I don't really love HR. I love people. I love coaching. I love relationships. I love that I can exercise compassion in my role and make a difference for people in their experience at work, because that has so much to do with their experience in life. But I don't love like the discipline of HR, you know? Yeah. And so being brave enough to like say that out loud and be okay with it, I think is also, it takes a level of self-compassion and also just like, okay, now that I know that, I can really start thinking about where I want to go next.
Okay. I have to ask you this question. And, yes. And I remember I did a lot of work on compassionate self-forgiveness at USM, and it was really eye-opening, but yeah. What gets in the way of being compassionate? Like, is it, why aren't we more compassionate? Is it fear mm-hmm. of, what is it?
Oh gosh, I think there's a few things. One is fear, right? Like fear is a big thing, yeah. I think. The other thing is, you know, I talk about empathy being the gateway to compassion, but compassion being the actual game changer, because compassion is action oriented. I think a lot of us actually just stop at empathy, right? So we might like, and empathy is a feeling. Like I might see you, I use the analogy, like if you're walking down the street and you see someone fall down in front of you, like sympathy is like, ooh, I feel bad for that person. And you keep walking. Empathy might be like, oh my gosh, I can imagine how that would feel. I feel so bad for that person. I hope they're okay. But you keep walking. Compassion is like, oh my gosh, I can imagine how that would feel, and extending your hand to help that person up, right? It's the actual action that changes their situation. And so I think for many people, because of the busyness of our lives, like we don't go as far, like we might feel the nudge, the empathy, but we don't go as far as taking the action, right? Like it's just, so I think I would just really encourage people, like if you feel the nudge to help someone, or even like you have being able to have empathy and compassion for yourself, like what action can I take for myself in this moment? But I think that's the thing, right? Like we're so busy and distracted with our phones and our job and our schedule and all these things that we're just not slowing down, I think, long enough to actually think about compassion and what action we could take to exercise compassion moment to moment.
I love it. I could keep talking. I swear, because I really, this is exactly what my podcast is about. But I won't, because you've got an appointment. Sam, thanks so much for coming on. And I hope to see you and Reg soon.
Thank you so much. What a great conversation. I can't wait for the next one.
Thank you.
Great. Bye.